Hello, everyone. Welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European macro research at Natixis, and with me is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello, also from my side. So today we would like to talk about the so-called neutral real interest rate, which is also sometimes called the natural real interest rate. The neutral real interest rate is an important reference point for central banks because it allows assessing whether monetary policy is in restrictive or accommodative territory when it comes to economic growth and inflation. The concept of the neutral rate is, however, also relevant for fiscal policy because it provides information on the real interest burden that governments can expect to pay on their debt. In this sense, the neutral rate is a central concept for understanding both monetary policy and the fiscal outlook.
So in today's podcast, we therefore want to talk about three things. First, we try to explain what the neutral rate is, how it's defined. This is important because there are various definitions floating around. We try to clarify these differences and thereby hope to clear up some of the confusion that may exist when talking about the neutral rate concepts. We'll discuss, second, the possible economic determinants of the neutral rate, i.e. the economic forces affecting it. There are many possible drivers here, and we shall provide a brief rundown of these. Thirdly, and most importantly, we'll discuss estimates of the long-term real interest rate using results from a recent paper by Thiago Ferreira and Sama Socha published in the Journal of International Economics. Here, we also provide updated estimates using their approach for the more recent past.
Okay, so let's start by clarifying a couple of conceptual aspects of what the neutral rate is. So the first thing to note is that the neutral interest rate refers to the rate of return on a safe asset. That is an asset without repayment risk. Usually, one takes this to be a safe government bond. Secondly, the neutral interest rate is defined in real terms, that is, it is the rate of return in terms of real purchasing power. One thus has to take the nominal yield on a safe government bond and subtract from that the expected inflation rate to get at the real interest rate. With this settled, we can now define what the neutral rate is. It is the level of real interest rate on a safe bond that if monetary policy keeps that level of real interest rates, it keeps output equal to the potential level at output at all times. And as a result of that, inflation will also be stable over time. The concept of the neutral or natural rate goes back to Swedish economist Knut Wicksell and has been conceptualized in modern economic models by Michael Woodford from Columbia University. So just to repeat, the neutral real interest rate, if implemented by monetary policy, closes the output gap at all times, that is, output is equal to its potential level, the level of savings and the demand that is present in the economy achieves that potential level, and through that contributes to inflation rates being stable over time.
This is where usually the trouble starts because there exist two notions of the real neutral rate, interest rate, a short-term notion and a long-term notion. The short-term notion of the neutral rate is the level of the real interest rate that keeps output at its potential at all times, even as the economy is hit by economic disturbances. Naturally, this notion of the neutral rate fluctuates with the business cycle, but also with secular trends. This concept, which is a reference of whether or not monetary policy is restrictive or not at any point in time, is intellectually very interesting, but empirically, obviously, hard to estimate.
Yes, and then there's a second, simpler notion of the neutral real rate that is a long-term notion. It asks the question of what the real interest rates have to look like on average, that is, when averaging out across economic disturbances and across the economic cycle, so that the output gap is closed on average and inflation is stable on average. This longer-term notion of the real interest rate is empirically somewhat easier to estimate because it refers to an average concept over the economic cycle. And in this podcast, we will talk exclusively about this longer term notion of the neutral real interest rates. That is the average level of real interest rates that closes the output gap on average and keeps on average inflation stable over time.
Central banks sometimes refer to this longer term notion of the neutral rate as the so-called terminal rate. This is because it is the real rate that an inflation targeting central bank, so a central bank that has a very explicit inflation target and tries to get there over time, and that such a central bank should expect its real interest rate to converge over time to that terminal rate. Therefore, if one adds the central bank's inflation target to the neutral rate, one obtains the central bank's nominal terminal rate. The long-term neutral rate is also the interest rate that the fiscal authority should expect to be paying on average when issuing debt. It is thus also an important indicator for the financing costs associated with refinancing maturing debt or issuing new debt.
Now, one difficulty with a long-term neutral rate is that it cannot be directly observed. One important reason is that the output gap, which is the long-term neutral rate, which the long-term neutral rate is supposed to close on average, is itself unobserved. So the inability to observe directly the output gap implies that it's also very hard to directly or impossible to directly observe the neutral rate. And that makes it necessary to infer the underlying neutral rate from observable data, in a particular from observed growth, inflation, and the policy rate, and filter it out from these observations. This is difficult for at least three reasons. The first is that growth and inflation are constantly affected by a range of short-term factors that are unrelated to policy, and one needs to filter these out in order to distill what the underlying neutral rate is. Secondly, the neutral rate is itself not fixed over time. Instead, it can change with over time because it depends in potentially important ways on changing economic fundamentals. In fact, historic estimates show quite some variation of the neutral rate over time. And third, and that's perhaps the most tricky part, the neutral rate may not be entirely exogenous to policy decisions. Fiscal policy in particular can influence the neutral rate in quantitatively significant ways. Policymakers that then seek to infer the neutral rate from the data may thus just look into their own mirror. The observed neutral rate may, at least partly, be the outcome of their own actions. And with this being said, let's now discuss some of the economic determinants of the long-term neutral rate before we discuss estimates of the long-term neutral rate.
So since we are talking about the long-term neutral rate here, economic theory suggests that the determinants of the neutral rate depend on fundamental long-term trends in the economy. In fact, economic theory provides a rather long list of potential drivers that can affect the neutral rate over time. So the first driver is productivity growth. Productivity growth is one important determinant of an economy's growth rate. If the trend growth rate of productivity falls, then the trend growth rate of the economy falls in tandem. And as a result, people will be less rich in the future compared to a setting with higher productivity growth. This in turn means that it becomes less hard to induce them to postpone consumption into the future, or in other words, the real interest rate has to fall together with the growth rate. There has indeed been a clear downward trend in productivity growth over the past decades. This is a fact that has been well documented and discussed in the economics literature, and this is a force that puts downward pressure on a long-term neutral rate.
Another factor influencing the neutral rate is demographics. Societies in many advanced and developing economies have become significantly older over time due to lower numbers of children. Slow-moving demographic shifts can affect the neutral rate via various channels. A rise in life expectancy, for example, can lead to stronger savings motives for younger cohorts and thereby depress the neutral rate through increased saving supply. Conversely, as older cohorts start to desave, this may induce upward pressure on rates. Demographic changes can thus affect the neutral rate in different directions. Rising income inequality has also the potential to affect the neutral rate. Since richer households have higher saving rates, a widening income inequality leads to an increased saving supply, and this depresses the neutral interest rate. In fact, a recent paper by Atif Mian, Ludwig Straub, and Amir Sufi titled "What Explains the Decline in R Star," by which they mean the neutral rate, Rising Income Inequality versus Demographic Shifts, that has been published in a Checks and Holds Symposium, finds that widening income inequality explains the observed fall in the neutral rate better than demographic shifts.
And the supply of safe assets, that is risk-free government papers, is yet another determinant of the demand for savings and thus a factor driving a neutral rate. A rise in the supply of safe assets will, all else equal, push the neutral rate up. What counts as a safe asset is to some extent in the eye of the beholder, but US treasuries are arguably still regarded as the ultimate safe asset in global markets. The fact that the US dollar tends to appreciate in times of crisis is an indirect sign that US government debt is still seen as a safe asset. And the amount of US government bonds outstanding has increased sharply since the financial crisis in 2007-08. Before the financial crisis, the amount outstanding of US government debt was below 10% of global GDP. It has since more than doubled to around 20% of world GDP. This is likely an upward force for the neutral rate, and with recent US deficits being very large, will likely continue to shift the neutral rate up.
Yet another factor affecting the neutral rate is the so-called convenience yield. The convenience yield reflects the value that investors assign to the liquidity and return properties of risk-free assets. The convenience yield may also reflect regulatory restrictions that investors can satisfy by holding certain safe bonds, and therefore the convenience yield may change with regulation. Overall, the convenience yield justifies a lower average bond yield for the safe government bond because the bonds also generate value to investors via these liquidity or regulatory channels. A higher convenience yield, therefore, lowers the neutral rate.
And finally, the natural rate can move due to global spillover effects coming from other countries. Capital markets are integrated across the advanced economies to a rather high degree, and thus any fundamental change in other countries can spill over to the domestic neutral rate. A prominent example for such a spillover is the export surplus and associated savings supply in emerging market economies, which can put downward pressure on the neutral rate. But let's now come to the question of how we can estimate the neutral rate.
Yeah, so we will report estimation results for the real neutral rate for the United States, the euro area, and the UK, based on a recent paper by Thiago Ferreira and Sharma Shusha, titled "The Supply of Safe Assets and Global Interest Rates," that was published 2023 in the Journal of International Economics. Their empirical model incorporates all the fundamental mechanisms that we have just mentioned, except for the inequality channel. According to their estimate, the real neutral rate was around 4% in the US back in the early 1960s, and between 4 and 5% in the UK and the euro area, which the latter didn't exist, of course, at the time, but was synthetically reconstructed for that period using the underlying countries.
Starting in the 1960s, there have been two significant downward movements then in the neutral real rate. The first happened during the 1960s, while the second happened during the mid-1990s. By the early 1970s, the real neutral rate decreased to levels between 0 and 1%. It then started to rise moderately again, reaching levels of around 1 to 2% between the late 80s and the middle of the 90s in the US, the UK, and the euro area. From the mid-1990s onwards, the neutral rate started to decline again, becoming negative in the euro area in the early 2000s and after the financial crisis also in the UK and the euro area. Overall, these estimates align well with other estimates done in the literature.
So now the interesting thing that you have done at Natixis, Dirk, is that you updated their model estimates up to the end of 2022, which allows looking at changes in the neutral rate between the year 2019, that is prior to the pandemic, and the year 2022, and also look at the economic drivers that may have contributed to these changes. Here, the interesting finding is that the neutral rate has moved up in the US, the euro area, and the UK by about 1 percentage point over the years 2019 to 2022. This is quite a bit for such a short period of time, and the point estimates now suggest that the neutral rate is positive again in the United States and the UK, and close to zero in the euro area.
Yes, and we can also use that model to look at the fundamental drivers that led to this relatively strong increase of the neutral rate in such a short period of time. And this shows that it was driven via strong supply of government debt and a corresponding drop in the convenience yield, which generated further upward pressure on the neutral rate. And again, if you look at the development of the neutral rate over the last four decades, this 1% increase over a very short period of time is quite outstanding.
Yes, what these estimates show is that the rising supply of safe assets, in this case, mainly the rise in US treasuries, has been a main factor pushing the real neutral rate up again. With the US deficits forecasted to be very high also in the future, according at least to the latest estimates of the Congressional Budget Office, it appears quite likely that the neutral rate will increase further. Moreover, there is also the possibility that we see a rise in productivity, as we have already partly seen in the US, possibly due to the wide implementation of artificial intelligence. And this would prospectively at least increase the growth rate and also push up together with that the neutral rate. While there's necessarily a high degree of uncertainty in measuring these effects, it would seem that the direction of the neutral rate in the coming years is likely going to be further up.
So to sum up, the neutral rate, real neutral rate, is an important reference point, certainly for monetary policy, for central banks, but also for fiscal policy. As appealing as the concept is, though, in theory, there are some difficulties in estimating it because it cannot be observed directly, and one has to do bring up quite a bit of effort to do this, but it can be done. And what these estimates show that there has been a long decline in the neutral rate when compared to a couple of decades ago. But what we discussed here, most recent estimates also show there is an upward increase over the last couple of years, mostly on the back of higher increase in government debt outstanding. What this overall suggests is that looking ahead, it's likely the neutral rate is going to rise quite a bit further. And if that happens, so we'll at some future point discuss that again in yet another podcast. That's all for today. Speak to you next week. Bye.